I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's Friday, March 22, at 8:37 p.m. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Cologne, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Edgman, myself, Co-Chair Johnson. We are assisted today by our moderator, Emily Mesh, and our committee secretary, Bree Wiley. Today, we will roll out a new committee substitute for both the operating and mental health budget, HB 268 and HB 270, hold a committee discussion, and set an amendment deadline for both bills. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 268, Wordcraft GH2492/D as a working document.
Thank you. I will object for purposes of discussion and ask my staff and operating budget coordinator, Ramon Henderson, to come forward and explain the changes from CS1 of the operating budget to the proposed CS2 before you. Welcome to House Finance. Mr. Henderson, please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ramon Henderson, staff to Representative Delaney Johnson. Members, before you today is a committee substitute for HB 268, document 33GH2493/D is in Delta, dated March 21st, 2024.
Hey. Oh, excuse me, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Henderson, you said 9-3. I'm looking at a document that says 9-2. I just want to make sure I have the right document.
I stand corrected. It is 9-2.
Thank you.
Pointing that out. So, Madam Chair, I'll first provide a summary of the total numbers reflected in the CS and go through the changes that were made between this CS and the previous work draft. Document number 33GH2492/U was a previous docket, and that was the document that was dated March 11th. For FY25 operating and FY24 supplementals, this CS reflects the following: a total budget of $10,429,085,200. A total budget of, and that's in it for agency operations, a total budget of $620,087,000 for statewide items. The funding sources for agency operations and statewide items are as follows: $4,898,379,600 in unrestricted general funds, UGF, $892,610,400 in designated general funds, $1,718,711,100 in other funds, and $3,539,471,100 in federal receipts. Compared to the governor's amended budget, the unrestricted general fund spent in this CS reflects an increase of $198,088,400, or a 1.9% increase in agency operations, primarily attributable to the $175 million that's added in education funding to the CS. For statewide items, there was a decrease of $3,012,500, or 1.8% decrease. Of this decrease, $2,814,200 is UGF. Madam Chair, I'll now go through the changes between this CS and the previous CS. And in most instances, I won't reference the page numbers and line numbers unless requested to do so. So Section 7, we added a new supplemental section to this CS that incorporates all the items requested in the governor's December 14th, 2023, January 30th, 2024, February 14th, 2024, and March 13th, 2024 supplemental requests, except for the following: In the Department of Administration, we deleted $525,000for an increase in billable rates by the Office of Administrative Hearings. This rate increase can be absorbed by the agencies being charged for this service or by the Office of the Governor's Central Service Cost Allocation, which has $5 million appropriated to that allocation just for these types of things. In the Department of Administration, we modified the $411,000 multi-year appropriation to address backlogs and public guardians. Cases from length, we moved it from the language section to the numbers section as a one-time item to eliminate a duplication because it is a request in FY, so there's an additional request in FY25 to add $429,700,000 in the base, so it will continue. So it's no longer a one-time item. In the Department of Labor, with the change that we made there was we increased, there was a $1.1 million appropriation for the STEP program in the supplemental appropriation, and we changed that to reflect from just only being able to spend those funds in FY24 to spend those funds in FY25. Additional numbers changes in the governor's 313-24 budget amendments. We accepted all of the governor's requested amendments in HB 268 operating budget with one exception. The only thing we didn't accept on the advice of Ledge Legal was the CS does not include the requested transfer of $5,415,300 from the Ocean Range your program account to the commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance account. This is not considered a legal appropriation as it would be a transfer between subaccounts. This transfer can be accomplished without an appropriation because it's within the account. In the Department of Education.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Henderson, could you just go back over that one more time? That what you just said about the Ocean Ranger account and the subaccounts, et cetera.
Yeah, in the advice of Ledge Legal, essentially, we didn't transfer the money from the Ocean Ranger account because it's a subaccount to the commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance account. Because they're subaccounts, they can be transferred within themselves. You don't need an appropriation for that.
Thank you.
In the Department of Education, we added back $5 million in UGF for the Alyeska Reading Academy as proposed in the governor's original request. The $5 million, in addition to the Head Start in FY25, we left that in. There was a fund swap. We did not do that fund swap, so there's still $5 million appropriate for Head Start and $5 million appropriate for Alyeska. We added a new section with a one-time increase of $174,600,000, equivalent to a $680 increase to the base student allocation for grants to school districts with the following language, which states, the appropriation is contingent on the failure of a version of the bill increasing the base student allocation to be passed by the 33rd legislature, last state legislature, and the second regular session enacted into law. So if there's a bill passed, then this and it would include the fiscal note that would hopefully include the same amount. And so so it's contingent upon that. We added back $1 million in the governor's original bill that was appropriated to the department to provide a grant to the Alaska Resource Education for expanding statewide workforce development initiatives for the years June 30, 2025. And June 30, 2026. Those were taken out in the previous CS, and we placed those back in. We added $145,300 in funding to the Alaska Council on the Arts to fully match the FY25 federal allocation. There's $719,900 is the current level of funding in the budget, and a total appropriation of $865,200 is needed to fully match the allocation from the National Endowment of the Arts.
Okay, we have a question, Representative Holm. Do you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, I just wanted to go back to the Alyeska Reading Academy. Well, and actually the Resource Education. Are those in the base or are those one time?
They are, I believe those are in the base. I don't think it's a one-time.
Okay, thank you.
You can confirm that with Ledge Finance if we'd like to do that now. Ledge Finance in the room.
Let's go ahead and finish this up. Representative Galvin, thank you, unless it applies to this question. We'll go ahead and finish this question and then go on.
Thank you very much, through the chair, if I may, quick one. There was, you commented that both Alyeska and there's also an appropriation for the Head Start. Would you repeat the Head Start appropriation?
Yeah, through the please? Chair, Representative Galvin's $5 million.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome, House Finance.
For the record, this is Connor Bell, fiscal analyst with Legislative Finance Division. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, to Representative Colom, the Alyeska Reading Academy funding is added to the base, so it would be funded every year. The resource education grant is a two-year multi-year of $1 million, so it would be a one-time appropriation of $1 million, and it could be spent in FY25 and FY26.
That's correct. Thank you.
Thanks. Through the chair, is the Head Start then in the base as well?
Through the chair, Representative Edgen, then yes, that's added to the base, the Head Start funding.
Representative Joseph.
Through the chair, Mr. Bell, just to be absolutely clear, the Alyeska Resource Education is effectively $1 million to be spent over two fiscal years. It can be spent all in FY25, $500,000 next year, $500,000 in FY26. In any way the grantee, in cooperation with DCCED, wants to do it. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that is correct. It is $1 million. It could be spent all in FY25. I believe the intention is to spend half in FY25 and FY26, but ultimately there is flexibility to spend it.
Okay. Continuing on, in the Department of Fish and Game, there were three fisheries management, fisheries assessment projects that were added. These include $300,000 for the coho salmon genetic testing of the Upper Cook Inlet commercial harvest. The genetic testing will allow the department to determine total run size, interception rates, productivity of specific coho stocks, and harvest patterns for different gear groups within the Upper Cook Inlet region, thereby providing for better scientific management of these stocks. There's $130,000 for the Chetlana Lake Weir project for the first year startup cost and $85,000 in the following years for ongoing operational costs. The camp was dismantled in 2020 and will need the initial startup costs. The $85,000 ongoing costs will provide funding for one seasonal part-time fish and wildlife technician 3 and two part-time seasonal fish and wildlife technician 2 positions to operate man weir. And then the last one is the $500,000. This is a mark recapture study. It's necessary to gain an updated estimate of sockeye salmon abundance running to the Susitna River drainage. This data will be used to better inform managers as to the total sockeye return in the Susitna drainage and to lead to the additional fishing opportunities for Alaskans. And there's $77,000 for seasonal fisheries biologist position to maintain the current efforts and to accommodate the added workload associated with the three projects we talked about. In the Department of Public Safety, when we listened to public testimony about a number of things, there was a lot of concern about the $3.7 million that for the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We've added that in the CS. And Department of Transportation, there's a $1 million UGF appropriation to fund the Old Glenn Highway vegetation set post at mile 1 through 17. This funding will allow for the clearing of vegetation and provide more visibility along the highway. The Old Glenn Highway, aside from being the only alternative route out of Anchorage to interior Alaska, in the event of a closure of the Glenn Highway, is a high-risk rural road ranking high on the statewide list of traffic collisions and fatalities. Also in the Department of Transportation, we moved $1,388,700 from the number sections to the supplemental language section so that we could have this as a multi-year. So instead of just having those funds available for FY24, they're available for FY24 and FY25. We also heard a lot of public testimony about the concern for the senior citizens caregivers. We did not add this $2.7 million in at this time. Just for clarification purposes, there was a misconception that there was a reduction to their budget, and that's not exactly true. What happened is this $2.7 million is federal COVID monies that were funded. And what happened is they increased their rates when they received those additional federal funds. And the concern was that if they don't have this money, that they're going to have to reduce the rates for those caregivers. According to Ledge Finance, the $2.7 million federal money has not been totally expended. It can be carried forward and used. We've sent legislative finance has asked the department to tell them how much of the $2.7 million has been spent. There's not been a response to that yet. And I did a follow-up on that a couple days ago and to see what the status was, and we still don't have a status update on what that appropriation level is right now. So as we go through the process, we find out that the $2.7 million, we'll find out how much is left, and then probably end up putting in the amount that was requested. But at this point, that's out. But we did hear that concern loud and clear. In the language section, the Department of, going back, in Department of Transportation, we've also deleted, there's a section called Cost of Job Class Reclassification section. This section has been in the budget for decades to reflect to direct the executive branch to not to submit supplemental appropriations when jobs are reclassified. The language is no longer necessary and has not been followed in years. They found a way to fund that within their appropriations themselves. In the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, we extended the multi-year appropriation of $340,000 in statutory designated program receipts appropriate to the Department for Natural Hazard Planning Assistance through FY27. So we disallowed that those funds to continue to be spent through FY27. We also added a new section appropriating $16,733 from the general fund to the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development for payment as a grant under AS 3705316 to the Alaska Scholastic Clay Target Nonprofit Corporation for the maintenance of Scholastic Clay Target programs and other youth shooting programs, including travel to compete in national collegiate competitions for the fiscal years ending June 30, 25 and June 30, 26. The amount represents the amount expected to be collected from NRA license plate sales. And if not used, those funds are lapsed into the general fund. Now, on to the permanent fund dividend and energy relief. What we've done here is taken the amount that was directed last year to go to the CBR for the waterfall effect. And that amount ended up being $143 million. So as you know, half of the waterfall, 50% was go to the CBR, 50% was go to energy relief. So now we've directed the entire waterfall to go towards an energy relief check. There's no longer any split between the CBR and the dividend. We've directed the entire amount. So that amount ends up being $286 million, and it ends up being an additional $444 in addition to whatever the permanent fund appropriation is. So that's $444 in addition. We also added another $180 for energy relief by using the surplus in FY24. After all supplementals have been appropriated, right now there's $116 million surplus. We've used that money to appropriate another $180 for energy relief. And then we've also added a new section which appropriates $1.1 billion from the earning reserves for a permanent fund dividend. And that amount is $1,648.
Madam, could you just repeat that last part again? It's coming from where? The
earnings reserve account. Through the chair.
So this would follow up. So would this be above the 5% draw on the earnings reserve then?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, no. This is within the POMV percentage. There are two ways to do it. You can appropriate it from the ERA to the general fund and then appropriate it for the dividend. We just appropriate it straight to the dividend. So with all of that, total PFD with energy relief payments in FY25 will be $2,272. Madam Chair, after the appropriations made in this CS, based on the spring projections, we still have a surplus of $152 million. As Legislative Finance Director Alexi Painter said in his overview of CS1, there are several things that have not been funded that will certainly reduce this surplus. There are fiscal notes, such as for the senior citizens benefit legislation that sunsets this year. The fiscal note associated with that bill is $23.5 million. There's ongoing employee bargaining negotiations going on that will result in contracts in FY25. There could be legislative capital projects in districts that are not added, but there are a host of other things that could increase the size of the budget, so the $152 million surplus could be gone pretty quickly, depending on what policies you take. However, this budget, as it stands now, is a balanced budget and requires no CBR draw at all. We heard the public comments. We took those into consideration. I mean, the budget has a size, has a PFD that seems an appropriate amount. We've got a balanced budget, and Madam Chair, that concludes my comments on the operating budget.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. So thank you for your presentation, Mr. Henderson. Appreciate it. First question is, how much money does it appear will be available for the capital budget? Anything above and beyond what the governor currently has in his capital budget?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, the governor has $297 million in this capital budget. The $152 million, that surplus, a portion of that money could be used to fund capital projects. That's the discretion of the legislature, how they're going to use that money.
So to summarize, you're saying, as of now anyway, the $152 million is potentially available for the capital budget, but that would be at the cost of what other potential areas within the operating budget that we might want to add?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, you may take that $152 million, use it for a capital project. You may want to have, there may be amendments for operating projects. There could be bills that are passed. Those all will affect that $152 million.
Thank you.
Representative Edge.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And the term surplus is the technically correct term, but at least in my experience, the vernacular here in at the table and perhaps down the hall with the other bodies is headroom, right? Because it's the room that you need to sort of accommodate all those other things that are out there, fiscal notes, anything in the capital budget, any unexpected priorities from the governor or whatever it might be, but also for next year. Isn't that correct?
Through the chair, Representative, that's correct.
And if I might, just on a separate issue, we have someone in the audience from CDBSA, but can you go back to that real quickly and just confirm that, is that 3.7 in the base as well?
That's correct. Oh, Chair.
Thank you.
Oops, Representative Josephson, followed by Representative Feldman.
Through the chair, Mr. Henderson, the language at the bottom of page 96, it doesn't say that a BSA bill would be in the range of the amount appropriated as one-time payment in the bill. It suggests that any bill increasing a BSA would result in foregoing the $174 million.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Would you repeat the question, please?
You bet. So through the chair, Mr. Henderson, the way, if I read this narrowly, and maybe I'm being too cynical about it, it suggests that even a smaller BSA increase of, say, $300 that were passed would result in foregoing the $174 million one-time funding. Is that intended that way?
Through the chair, I believe that's the intent.
Followed. I mean, I don't expect you, if I could just make a statement, this works to tamp down on efforts to increase the BSA. That's how I read this for the rest of the session. But, maybe I'm wrong. Thank you.
Through the chair, I'm not going to, there's a possibility that you might pass a larger BSA, and that would allow for that as well.
So just to Representative Josephson, we did not have that discussion. Actually, what happened is while we were building this budget and working on this, it was during the heated debate over the education funding, so this seemed to be the proper amount to put in without any kind of subtext or strategy added when we put it in. So the intent was to make sure the education was funded, and so that's how we had some kind of backup in there.
And through the Madam Chair, just for clarification purposes, to answer Representative Edgman's question about the CDBSA, I was incorrect. That is a Inc. one-time item increase.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question to Mr. Henderson is mostly because I probably missed it, so pardon me if so. It's two things around education funding. One is transportation, and I'm just remembering what we already had in a previous bill, and I'm not sure if that's covered. I know some districts are really concerned about that, so I wanted to ask if that was here and I missed it. And the second question is around whether there was conversation for the reading special needs, if we decided those who have shown through their first screening to have needs. What we had presented in the past in a previous bill was support for each student who had shown needs. And I know that there is something in here for the Alaska Reading Academy, and I wasn't sure if the discussion went to that instead of to schools in the classroom for whatever their needs were for specialists, just those two things.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the things that we added were not to try and add everything that was in SB 140. The thing that we heard the loudest and clearest was the BSA increase, and so we included that mainly.
Thank you. Follow up, if I may. So just to be clear, I believe there's already something in transportation, but there was and again, I asked those who have been here much longer who would know whether it's already in a base, but I think that some districts wanted an addition to what was already there. And so that part, I guess, I'm not sure about as well.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, no, we did not add any. There is something in the base for pupil transportation, but we did not add any additional money for pupil transportation.
Thank you.
Very good, Representative Stapp.
thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Henderson. So just a quick summary, I guess, of the highlights of the budget, if you could. And then So I'm seeing that it's a obviously you have the $680 kind of at least monetary placeholder for BSA. That's equivalent to about $175 million boost to education funding. We have before us a balanced budget with over $150 million in surplus. Now, obviously, when we account for CBAs and capital projects that people are going to want down the road or bills that people want to pass, I think it's probably fair to say that most of that $150 million plus money is probably out there that kind of can be assigned to stuff. And you mentioned the PFD and the waterfall and the energy relief. So what is the total amount? So as an individual watching right now, like as far as this budget is concerned currently, the CS, that October distribution, what does that look like for an individual?
I have a little statement I can give you on that if you'd like. Under this CS, our constituents would be receiving $2,273 check this fall. Alaskans have not received, we haven't received a full PFD since 2015, and this does not get us to the full 50-50, but it does get as close as we possibly could get to that while we maintain the critical state services that we have and have a small surplus. Many of you know that we started with a full statutory dividend, which would leave us over $1 billion in deficit spending. One of the goals that we started this process with was to make sure that we had a balanced budget. So we didn't make it to a 50-50, but it does represent the third largest dividend in Alaska's history, and it still does have the $150 million surplus. And so with inflation and energy, I think we felt like this was how we could strike a balance between state services and education increase, try to get we listened to the public comment, and we tried to put in those things that people made note of, as well as providing that healthy check this fall. So 2273.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
All right, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Henderson, you started by committee of substitutes incorporates the supplementals. I want to go to two of the big supplemental items we see: the fire suppression and disaster response. Did this substitute increase in those departments besides the supplemental? Did you add anything into the base at DNR for fire suppression?
Through the chair, no, we did not add any additional monies. We just accepted the amount that was in the governor's request. But I do have to make a correction, which deals with the Department of Corrections. We did withhold the governor's request for $40 million in supplemental to the Department of Corrections. We've temporarily withheld that for now. We're going to have some meetings with the department and with the other body to discuss the increase in costs in that department. In FY 20, the department spent less than $300 million. In FY 25 request, the request is over $400 million. That's a $100 million increase. There's also a request for $32 million increase in FY 25. So we just want to take a look at what's going on in that department and make sure that the supplemental amount is appropriate amount.
And just so you know, my intention, if the timing is right and it's the will of the committee, is to ask corrections to come and explain how and why those numbers are going up, and then we can make additional changes.
And I had one other question on a different. Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Henderson, this goes to the Ocean Ranger DEC Ledge Legal. So about a week ago, when we had information before us, there was a memo asking for authorization to move $5 million from the Ocean Ranger into the passenger vessel fund to fix that. You've now said they don't need our permission to do it. It's within the same allocation or appropriation. So does that extend to they could use the entirety of the Ocean Rangers at DEC any way they want without authorization or an appropriation from us, or just that $5 million?
Through the chair, I'd like to have Ledge Finance come up and answer that question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rob Carpenter, Ledge Finance. To Representative Hannon's question, that they would have to have expenditure authority to expend additional Ocean Ranger money, whether it was in either account. So the idea here is that this, there are two accounts within one statutory fund framework, which then they only need legal appropriations from that fund. So if you have that expenditure authority, yes, you could.
One follow-up.
Follow-up, and then Representative Josephson.
Through the chair. So Mr. Carpenter, the $5 million we're talking about in that appropriation is money that was going to ADA. So for a dock in Whittier, and this was backfilling out of the Ocean Ranger from an accounting error, as it was described in that memo. So I am trying to figure out whose spending authorization that was. Was that ADA's? Was that DEC's? And why were we given a memo implying that we needed to authorize that if really they can do anything they want?
Would you like to take a brief of these?
I'd like to take an ease because I'd like to get Ledge Legal to answer that question, and they're on standby. You can give them a call.
All right, brief of these.
Thank you.
House Finance back on the record. I believe we have Ledge Legal maybe on the phone.
Yes, Ms. Marks, can you hear us?
Yeah, I sure can. Again, just for the record, this is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services. And I understand there was a question for me.
Yes, would you please repeat the question? Representative Hannon has a question.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, and I guess I'll just, since you're jumping in the middle. So there's been a reference to, my question comes to the Ocean Ranger appropriation backfill to the passenger vessel fund of $5 million that we're told this morning in this CS we do not need to authorize because it's the same appropriation line, and so the agency can make that transfer. Approximately a week ago, we were given a multi-page memo about this item that implied they needed our authorization, or a policy call needed to be made. And my question is, can DEC move that money around as they see fit, as long as there is expenditure authorization? With regard to the $5 million that is causing this discussion, is that authorization in the ADA budget or in the overall DEC budget to move that appropriation around?
Yes. Again, Marie Marks, Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm assuming you mean that you're referring to an appropriation that has happened in the past, not one that would happen in the future. Regarding appropriations that have taken place in the past, the original restrictions would stay attached to those funds deposited, no matter how it was coded. And I just want to make it clear that subaccounts are fund codes. They're not the same things as funds. Those are internal department accounts that don't exist in statute. So when the legislature appropriates money into a fund, what the legislature is doing is giving the person or the department or whoever has authority to spend money from that fund authorization to spend money in accordance with the purposes of the fund. So when the legislature appropriates money, it's not just moving around, it's appropriating money for a particular purpose. Fund codes, like these subaccounts, they are established administratively, and they're just a way for departments and Ledge Finance to track money. Changes, transfers between those subaccounts, they don't necessitate an appropriation or other enactment of law. Like, there's no basis in law for such an appropriation, because what this would do, it'd be move money from the fund here. It would be moving money from the Commercial Passenger Vessel Environmental Compliance Fund into that same fund, which has no legal effects. And, you know, under statute, agencies, as you know, agencies can't transfer money between appropriations, but they absolutely can transfer money within an appropriation. Again, subject to the money, the original restrictions when that money was first appropriated.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. And as a follow-up, Ms. Marks, under the original language of the Citizens Initiative that created the Ocean Ranger Funds with a $4 tax, if I'm not mistaken, that falls within those guidelines as well, that process or the appropriate, the things that have transpired since that time fall within the law that was created through the Citizens Initiative?
Through the, again, for the record, remarks with Legislative Legal Services, through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the use of that money, and I think you're talking about the fees in 4603, 480 fees, have other strings that are perhaps attached to that money. The use of it are guided by the statute and law that will have restrictions on that money. But that is a separate issue, whether that money, use of that money has constitutional restrictions or statutory restrictions, is different than whether the legislature should be appropriating money from a fund into its same fund. The original restrictions when the legislature appropriated money into the overall commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance fund stays. How that money in that fund is used is a completely separate issue. And as you pointed out, it would have restrictions and so forth on it. But we are just talking about appropriating money into that fund, or appropriating money between sub-accounts that, again, don't exist in statutes that are really an attorney and accounting mechanism. With, again, two different issues here. If the department needs to change administratively, if they've been internally transferring money between their sub-accounts, again, these are just codes. They're just fund codes. They're not funds. They're just codes used to track funds. If they have to correct any kind of administrative error, it doesn't need an appropriation to do that, which is, again, as you pointed out, a completely separate issue than how that money is spent.
Thank you. It's still a little unclear to me, but unless you can further elaborate on, again, my original question, I understand how there's a separate accounting that takes place within the fund itself. I understand that. But my question is what has been happening since the end of the program of the Ocean Ranger program, which ended when the new administration took office, since that time, how those monies have been spent, do they fall within the original guidelines or the original statute language that created that particular fund? That's my question.
Again, for the record, remarks, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair, Representative Ortiz. I am not familiar. You probably turn to Ledge Finance to see how that money was spent. I don't have that information about how money that was appropriated into the fund is spent. But again, that's not my understanding of the issue here with the appropriation, is how money should be appropriated, into the fund or out of the fund. I'd probably turn to Ledge Finance. Again, when the legislature appropriated that money into the fund, I turned to Ledge Finance and see what those restrictions were.
All right, thank you.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. So what we'll do is I'll take a short, we have Alexi online. I'd like to give him just a short opportunity to answer. And then if we need to get more in depth, we probably have to take it after we get finished up here. But we'll go ahead and see if we can get if Alexi knows in-depth detail right off the top. So let me go ahead and go to Alexi Painter and see if he has heard the question. Alexi, are you online? Okay, it does not look like we have Alexi here. We do. I don't know if we have anyone else here that would like to address this. We can. Mr. Carpenter, if you'd like to come forward and go ahead and make a short statement if you can, and if you want to let us know when you can come back with additional information, please let us do that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We're happy to get back with, I think Representative Ortiz's question was the recent expenditure on those accounts, whether they're being used for the statutory purpose. We'll get back to you with that. I can't tell you off the top of my head. The idea of the revenues collected to the statutory fund and the expenditure from that fund is your all's appropriation authority. And our tracking using fund codes is just for that. We track the intent behind those revenues and how you intend to appropriate them. But in the bottom line is you have that overall power from that fund, and moving the money within the fund is up to the agency using it.
Very good. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Carpenter. So I'm sure you've heard of an appropriation structure from FY, I think, 20 and 21 or 21 and 22 called the Janus structure. And that is now the subject of litigation. And I only mention the Janus structure because to hem in expenditures so that we controlled what dollars were spent for, we created a sub-appropriation or a separate appropriation within the civil section at DOL. I only mention this in the context of the Ocean Ranger. to make sure that funds were spent on environmental protection and not on docks in Whittier, would we need to do something like that? Is that how we got where we are, where monies that the public thought were being taken from cruise ship passengers for environmental protection have somehow evolved and woven their way into dock repairs in Whittier? Is it that sort of analysis?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, or I'm sorry, Representative Josephson, for the most part, yes, you have a statutory framework where revenues are collected into that fund, and that fund has a purpose. It's a designated purpose, and then the legislature appropriates from it. If you want to restrict and that revenue source, you would need to probably modify the statute, but I might refer to Ledge Legal on that as well, or the collection of the revenues.
It sounds like something we need to investigate further, but Representative Josephson, go ahead.
Back on the overall budget, if I might, to
please,
Mr. Henderson.
Please do.
To the chair, Mr. Henderson. I'm looking at Mr. Painter's update from 2 days ago. So this is just 2 days old. In fact, I think he presented in the afternoon, so less than 2 days old. At page six, he has excluding education, because we've got at least part of that in our budget, if the governor doesn't veto it. We have $23 million for senior benefits. You mentioned that. $38 million for a shortfall to Marine Highway. I don't know if that's in the budget. We have these union contracts. So on page six alone, there are in excess of, I'm going to say, $70 million. On page seven, there's another $40 million, 41, for renewable energy fund, school construction, major maintenance, deferred maintenance. So we're up to something over $100 million. Then on page eight, we have the fiscal notes and the community assistance. I don't know where we are on that in the budget. We have replacement of one-time items. We've heard that for CDBSA, that's in the budget. We have the fire and disaster fund, and then we have the hiring of new employees. We were told that could be $11 million just for the full-time employees. So there's in the range of a couple hundred million dollars. And are those items, I guess what I'm wondering is, if this is passed by the House and the public believes they're getting a $2,272 dividend, is that realistic?
I guess, go ahead.
Through the chair, as I mentioned earlier, that $152 million could disappear quite rapidly. The things that are listed in that document are things that could potentially happen. It doesn't mean that they are going to happen. I mean, without getting into a lot of detail, there's a mention of the, I think it's $35 or $38 million for Alaska Marine Highways. Based on how they are going to be operating, we don't think that that's, Ledge Finance doesn't think that that's going to, that it will occur. It's a possibility, depending on what their schedule is and how many runs they have. So all of those things are potential adds to the budget, but you're absolutely correct that those things, if they did occur, would reduce the amount of the permit fund dividend.
Okay, go ahead. Representative Colom.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I just wanted to commend Mr. Henderson on the work here. I think it's important to recognize that a lot of changes happened here because of public testimony, and there was a lot of consensus around things that were added to the CS. I know that the permanent fund is always controversial, but families in Alaska are hit pretty hard right now with inflation, and I appreciate the understanding of that and trying to make the dividend as large as possible to help families, and just appreciate the work. I think it's, although there is a lot of stuff hanging out there, I think there is a comfortable surplus to cover whatever's coming our way. And also, just to make sure the public knows, this is you know, the House is put on the spot to put the first operating budget out, and there's a lot of things change and shift as you're trying to put that together. And so I appreciate having a little bit of room here to shift and change, and just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's it, it is. It's we get the budget, and it's, you know, it's a quite a lift to go through and analyze every fund source, so everything that might need to be changed. And so, of course, I want to say how much I appreciate all the work that I'll say our finance staff, but every member of this at this table's finance staff has spent a lot of time looking at all of these numbers. And so our first run, we're the first budget out. The House operating budget is first budget out, and I'm pretty pleased with what it looks like. And certainly it'll be changed. If this budget didn't get changed, I think it'd be the first time in state history that we passed a House operating budget unchanged. All right. Representative Ortiz, followed by Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. And I would also like to concur with Representative Colomb's comments in relationship to the hard work that Mr. Henderson has done to put this, and others and staff have to put this CBR together. Really appreciate it. I would like to go back to the breakdown on the PFD, just so that I'm clear and understanding how much of the PFD, what breakdown on the split of the POMV does that number reflect, and what's the raw figure that comes just from the draw, or from the, yeah, what's the split, and what's the dollar breakdown to be a part of that 2,227 figure? I just want to make sure I can get excited about the possibility of private citizen Dan Ortiz gets the $2,227. I'm getting excited about that. That's exciting.
Brief at ease, member.
Brief at ease. Record, Mr. Henderson.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. So, on page 72, lines 12 through 17, the sum of $3,657,263,378 is appropriated from the earnings reserve as follows: $1.1 million to the dividend fund, and $2.5 billion to the general fund. So that is the POMV. That's how it's split.
$1.1 million.
$1.1 billion.
Billion. I'm sorry. Yeah. $1.1 billion. As a follow up. Thank you. And then after that, how, because we are under this proposal, the idea of 50% of the money going into the CBR and 50% of the money going to a fuel subsidy. Now it's 100% of that money going to the fuel subsidy. What's the current balance of the CBR, and how much will it not grow because of that decision?
Through the chair, I believe the current balance of the CBR is about $2.7 billion. And in terms of whether there is any growth will depend on how much is actually spent when this bill gets through all of its moving pieces. Sure. And there could very well be some reductions that are made. You've got vetoes that could occur. Those things could add to the CBR.
Understood. But just as
if I might, I just want to make note that the CBR is not invested at the same level as some of our other funds, so it doesn't get the return on, you know, large returns that other ones do.
I understand that. All I was saying is, what's the opportunity cost of now not putting the 50% into the CBR, but it's all going to the energy subsidy? How much then are we foregoing going into the CBR?
Through the chair, was $143 million that was supposed to go to the CBR.
That's okay, so $143 million. Thank you very much.
Representative Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair, through the chair. So thank you, Mr. Reed. I think Representative Ortiz actually a pretty good question. So a couple of points I'd say. Number one, we have really high vacancy rates in our departments, so we are lapsing payroll services funds. Those monies, ultimately, when the CBR is audited next year, whatever is lapsed will continue to add to the balance of the CBR whenever that's audited and comes out. It's kind of similar to what happened last year. The second thing I kind of wanted to bring up is, you know, keep in mind, you know, a couple of years ago, the feds ruled energy relief money as tax exempt from federal income taxes. So, you know, if you take a look at being able to help Alaskans in their time of need at that, that is a portion of, you know, what we talk about is the dividend check, but that's a non-taxable portion. So that's the net value to do that for, I think, Alaskans when you have high inflation pressure is pretty impressive, especially when the feds don't claw any of that money back. So thanks.
All right.
One final question.
Okay. Representative Ortiz, Representative Galvin, and then I'll have Ramon or Mr. Henderson, if you would wrap up after those two questions.
Based on the current bill before us, where are we with fire suppression? Are we increasing? I think it was originally $14 million going into fire suppression, but we saw the line that the average is much higher than that. Are we increasing anything into fire suppression?
Through the chair, if you're referring to the FY25 request, or you're referring to the supplemental?
Mainly FY25.
Okay. Maybe through the chair, the answer to that question, it's pretty clear that we're not budgeting the amount of money that we need to budget for fire suppression. That's why we keep coming back for supplementals. It's been suggested by Ledge Finance that we, you know, truth in budgeting, maybe should be putting more money into it. That answers your question. But I can't tell you what that amount would be or should be. They come up with an average, and maybe that's what we should be putting in this budget, what the average has been.
So to summarize, my question is, so right now we're not adding anything to – under this current proposal, there's not any additions to true up fire suppression.
Through the chair, that would be correct. To try and true it up, that is correct.
Thank you.
So I just want to make the statement on that certainly most of these questions, I don't think there's any one of them that we didn't have fairly robust discussions in our office about. And on the fire suppression piece, we do fund it at the level the administration requests. But the other part of that is we fund the supplemental, if we fund additional fire suppression, I would rather see them come back with true numbers than to take a whole bunch of money and put into another pot of money that can just be used when we don't know if that's going to be needed. So In my opinion, it was better to wait for the supplemental request and knowing that it's out there oftentimes, but it isn't many times. It's definitely changeable. So that was my thoughts on that. So I think we had one last question, Representative Galvin, and then maybe then following Representative Galvin, I'll give Representative Cronk the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also very much appreciate all of the work that went into this. Thank you. And thank you for allowing us to have this discussion here, as we didn't, we're privy to the conversation, you know, in your office and all of that. So it helps us to orient. I do agree with Representative Colomb that there has clearly been a lot of work on, as much as possible, paying attention to the public testimony. And there are two questions that I had about that I'm not sure if were met or not, and maybe they were met, but what I heard, and I have my long list of the testimony. I took each and every one down, and there was a lot from the care providers from day healthcare, and I know that was a puzzle for how to help those folks, but I want to ask if there was anything that touched that. And then the second question I have is separate, and maybe I can have that in a follow-up. Now is okay. So the second question is regarding the pieces of education funding, because when folks, we were rightly suggesting that folks don't testify on anything related to SB 140, which at that time was the public education K-12 vehicle, and it's no longer the vehicle. And so public testimony did not come in so much around that. I think some did, even if they were told not to, but there were, what I'm getting at is that the pieces like transportation, the pieces like help with the education, reading and things, I think that we didn't really get a chance to hear as much as maybe we would have if we didn't have SB 140 on people's minds. So I just wanted to flag that, and I don't know if you already had conversation about that in your office. But so those are the two pieces. It's the loose ends of early learning and things that we didn't get to approach that were in Reed's Act and things, and then the healthcare workers who were struggling with their wages.
Thank you. Mr. Henderson.
Yeah, go ahead. Through the chair, I think your first question related to the $2.7 million for the caregivers. Mm-hmm. And as I stated, we are still trying to find out how much of that money that they received is still available before we appropriate any additional funds. In terms of the second question, as I stated, the only thing that we really addressed was the $170 million, $5 million that was required to fund a $680 increase to the BSA. That's the only thing.
Thank you.
Question?
Go ahead, and then I'm going to let – yeah, I would like to go ahead and let – I'm going to go ahead and take – I'll take this one more. I said I was going to do it one more, but I'm going to take one more, Representative Josephson, because I want to make sure people do get a chance to, you know, I mean, I want to be fair across the table here, but we also got to get finished up. So Representative Josephson followed by Representative Cronin.
Through the chair, I was surprised, and there are a lot of numbers here, but the $2.7 million for, I think, senior and disability services, maybe? Are you sure that's connected to the testimony on the personal care attendants or DPS direct personnel services, these folks that are caring for people in wheelchairs or who are 90 years old or like my father, that sort of person. Are you sure that's the same source or the same service that we're talking about?
Through the chair, I believe so, but I have Ledge Finance to verify that. But yes, my understanding is that what it was for is for the increased rates for these people to take care of folks. And there was concern that the rates would have to be dropped when that $2.7 million disappeared.
Just a quick follow-up. I thought it was $7.5 million that we'd given for the services described by Representative Galvin in the current fiscal year. So I thought it was different buckets.
We have Representative we have someone here from Ledge Finance. Mr. Carpenter, not Mr. Carpenter, but someone here from Ledge Finance. Go ahead and state your name for the record and for me, and then.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Valerie Rose, fiscal analyst with Legislative Finance Division. Through the chair to the questions regarding various personal care attendants, SDS rates, et cetera. I think we're kind of talking about a variety of rates and a variety of legislative actions that have taken place over the last few years. With regard to the testimony last Tuesday that specifically was related to an SDS ARPA funds, those were set to expire at the end of FY24, and they are part of the governor's FY24 supplemental request to extend those funds into FY25. That is reflected in HCS2's supplementals. That amount, I believe the carry forward for that in FY24 was $2.8 million. I believe it was $3.9 million in FY23, so that would mean that they expended approximately $1.1 million in grants from those ARPA funds during the course of FY23. I believe the restrictions on that federal extension mean that they have to have those funds liquidated by the end of January of 2025. So I do not know at this time how much the department is projecting to carry forward into FY25, but if they are keeping pace with prior years, they should have enough funding to carry forward into FY25 should that supplemental pass through both legislative bodies. With regard to $7.5 million of UGF that was added as one-time funding for to boost child care wages, that was an action that the legislature took as a one-time item for FY24. And there is, my understanding, not currently anything in the budget that would be similar to that for FY25.
If I might.
One follow-up.
Just through the chair, Ms. Rose, I wasn't talking about the child care grant. I was talking about monies that were used for adults, for DPS and PCA, to keep people in their homes rather than in institutions. And I thought we had appropriated a similar amount to the child care number for those folks. And we got over 20 phone calls, maybe it was around 20, from around the state from care service people who make in the range of $18 to $21 an hour or something. And continually and repeatedly said, we can't afford to do this. We want to do this. We have a passion for it, but we can't at this rate to do it. That was the bucket of money I was talking about, and wondering whether that had been replaced and put or added to in this budget.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, if I am recalling correctly, both FY23 and FY24, the legislature did have one-time funding that was, I believe in FY23, there was actual intent language attached to the one-time funding that specified that the legislature was adding general funds on top of what was a set rate for services, with the intent that providers would then use those additional funds to support worker wages. Of course, when you're speaking about privately held businesses, the legislature can only do so much to say this is how we want to spend, and there's only so much legal authority to ensure that they comply. In FY24, I apologize, I do not have these numbers off the top of my head, so I will have to get back to the committee. But there was another one-time item, and there was no intent language attached to that. At this time, there is not one-time funding in FY25.
I'm going to go ahead and stop right there. Thank you. Representative
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I know the fire, obviously, suppression costs are coming up, but my office has been examining, you know, true fire costs. So it's looking to us like the supplemental actually provides a more accurate cost when it comes to their fire costs. I think in fiscal year 23, we found $19 million that were there that, you know, were more than needed. So I think the supplemental is the way to go when it comes to it, even though obviously, there's a big discrepancy on fires. But I guess I'm going to throw my plug in here that if we invest money into a forestry program that actually is built into, you know, helping suppress fires, yes, the investment may look like it's a lot of money in the beginning, but in the end, hopefully we could save, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars from just, you know, actively fighting fires and producing a lot of, you know, business and products. So I'm just going to throw the plug out there. We've been doing this backwards. We're actually spending a lot of money and getting nothing out of it. Let's spend a lot of money and get something out of it. So that's my plug. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Henderson, do you have anything you would like to wrap up with?
I've wrapped up. I'm
wrapped up? No. All right, well, thank you. Seeing no additional questions, I will remove my objection. Is there any other objections to the adoption of the CS? Hearing none, the CS is before us as our working document. And we have a motion, if I might, from Chair Foster.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for HB 270, work draft GH2490/U, as our working documents.
Oh, yes. I'll object for purposes of discussion, and that is to bring the mental health budget before us for discussion. So our next item is CS1 of the mental health budget proposed, and Mr. Henderson, if you would, go ahead. And
thank you, Madam Chair. This will be very brief. The CS for the mental health budget, the governor submitted one amendment to that budget on March 13th, 2024, which was addressed by Director Standards on 314. We accepted that. But there are two things that we did change in this budget, and that is that we added the $250,000 general fund match for a crisis now, and we added $500,000 general fund MH for crisis now, and $250,000 GF MH for crisis services grants. With that information, Madam Chair, this CS now reflects all the items that were approved and requested by the Mental Health Board Authority in their operating budget requests.
Representative Josephson.
The Chair, Mr. Henderson, the original budget, the governor, as I understood it, was requiring the Mental Health Trust to spend money it held that it didn't necessarily want to spend, and I think we've dispensed with that. We're not doing that.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay.
That's,
and but the Mental Health Trust recommendations, which would be in the previous budget we've just taken up and just adopted, temporarily at least, version D, all of those recommendations are still not in that budget. Is that right?
Through the chair, with this document that we have before us, all the recommendations are in now. Well, this is in the operating side. There are capital items as well, but that's not reflected in this budget.
But the Mental Health Trust was saying, recommending to this institution and the governor to spend our money. So that wouldn't be in the mental health budget. It would be in the regular operating budget.
Through the chair, I'm not quite sure I understand the question. I guess what I'm trying to state is that a document was prepared by the Mental Health Trust that identified all the items that they requested and the items that the governor had left out, and in addition, items where the governor had used MARTAR funds, and the governor took those out in his amendments versus what he originally questioned. So now what's in the CS reflects exactly what the board had adopted and approved.
I'll talk to you more off record. Thank you.
All right, any further questions on the mental health budget? All right, I will remove my objection. Any further objections? Thank you. Hearing none, the CS before us is our working document. At this time, I'm setting an amendment deadline for HB 268 and HB 270 for next Tuesday, March 26th at 12 p.m. Amendments must be submitted through the Legislative Finance Amendment System. By that time, in order to be considered, any amendments should be drafted to the two versions of the bill that we just adopted. Finance staff received training earlier this week from Legislative Finance Amendments on the Legislative Finance Division's amendment system. But if there's any lingering questions on how to operate that system, please reach out to Legislative Finance Division. If you have any other questions regarding the amendment deadline or this process next week, please reach out to Ramon Henderson or Matt Gerning in my office. Again, amendment deadline for HB 268 and HB 270. The operating and mental health budgets are next Tuesday, March 26th at 12 p.m. Next meeting is this afternoon at 1:30 when the committee will hear the public testimony on HB 155, naturopaths licensing practice, and HB 219, which is a repeal of the assistive technology loan program. And with no additional business.
Madam Chair,
excuse me.
Before you adjourn, may I make a comment?
Yes, please.
I just want to thank all of you and all of your staff for all the work that you've done in this. You know, helped quite a bit. Ledge Legal did a lot of work, and Ledge Finance. They've just done a tremendous job. Great staff all the way around. I just want to know how much I appreciate that. That's all I want to say.
Thank you. Thank you. We have so many people working together that, you know, I forget, unfortunately, and should never do that, to be reminded of all the people that work together on this. So, seeing no further business before the committee, thank you to everyone, and we are adjourned at 9:59 p.m.